Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture.
One perennial issue that Aristotle examines and deals with in Nicomachean Ethics Book 1 is the connection between the class of external goods, that is, goods that are not goods of the body or goods of the soul, and the nature of human happiness. And the question is this: do we need some measure of external goods in order to be happy in the full sense, in the sense that Aristotle himself intends? This is actually, to say a little bit about the history of philosophy, this is a point on which Aristotle and the Aristotelians took quite a bit of flack from some of the other schools. Because Aristotle is advancing a virtue ethics. We see that happiness itself, like I put here, consists largely in virtuous activity, right? Not even just possession of the virtues, but actively doing things that express, that consolidate, that build, perhaps even promote the virtues in other people. But there's this and. Aristotle thinks that you have to have some measure of external prosperity in order to truly be happy. So it's not a question of, well, is it wealth or property or external goods or virtue? It's actually both and. Although virtue is going to be more important in the equation, Aristotle says you do need some external prosperity. So some schools that said, no, virtue is the only good. You can be totally poor, totally destitute, deprived of friends, have everybody turned against you in your political community. But if you have virtue, you'll still be happy, just as happy as the guy who has some virtue but also has all the benefits of life that you could think of. So Aristotle is working through a sort of middle path in this between those who would say external goods are really the most important thing and those who want to say virtuous activity is the most important thing. He's not saying that they're on the same level either. Virtuous activity is higher and more important, as we're going to see, but external goods do matter. So, eudaimonia is the Greek term that we translate by happiness, and as Aristotle points out, it's not something that is a mere feeling that we have at a particular time. We say, I'm so happy because somebody got me a nice balloon, and now there it goes up in the sky, and now my happiness is gone, the way kids are prone to. That's not happiness in the full sense that Aristotle's talking about. The thing about it is fulfillment, flourishing, really doing well. That's another way in which he talks about it, living well, doing well. So Aristotle says that this consists largely in virtuous activity, in activity that is expressive of, that is oriented by, that embodies the virtues, the excellences of character. So courage, temperance, justice, generosity, even having a good sense of humor is part of that, having control over one's temper, being truthful about oneself. Friendliness is one of them. Friendship itself is also part of the equation. And so this is a very robust conception of what the good life is. Now the question is, does it require external goods? And in chapter 8, Aristotle gives us two sets of reasons, if we think about the different subject matters, why having external goods would play some role in happiness. So if we focus on virtuous activity, and we think about what's required in order to exhibit the virtues, we don't do them in a total vacuum. We do them in contexts. And sometimes they require what Aristotle calls instruments or tools. For example, if you want to be generous, it's very difficult to be generous if you don't have any wealth at all. You could do it by getting credit cards and running up big credit card bills, but that wouldn't actually be generosity. That would be spendthriftness or prodigality, as some of the older translations have it, because it wouldn't be for a good purpose and it would be putting you at risk. You do indeed, in order to be generous, require some level of material prosperity. I suppose you could be generous with your time, seeing that as something that you have at your disposal. But if we go even further, one of the other virtues that's similar to that is what Aristotle calls magnificence. And this is not something that is, in fact, possible for everybody, because it requires that you have significant outlay that you can put into, you might say, the public display or the public activities. in order to fight on the battlefield and exhibit courage in the fullest sense back then, you actually had to have some wealth, enough to get yourself a shield, a spear, and some armor that you had to supply. So like he says, some noble actions, some actions that are expressive of virtue, are going to require wealth. Right? Some wealth, property, resources of that sort. Some of them are going to require that you have friends. You might not actually have money, but you have to have friends, or at least people that you're companions with, in order to exercise the virtues that have to do with companionship, right? Or justice. If nobody wants to hang around with you, it's, I suppose, almost trivially possible to be unjust, except perhaps towards yourself, because nobody will have anything to do with you. Some require that you have some political power. He actually does talk about this in terms of dunamis politikes. Now, we could translate that term politikes much more broadly and say social power, or nowadays we talk in terms of social capital. So, for example, what we're doing here on the internet would be an example of the kind of power that Aristotle's talking about. The fact that I have, you know, close to 30,000 subscribers at the point that I'm shooting this, so I have a wide range of capacity to reach people, that provides a possibility for doing certain virtuous activities. I don't want to go into too great detail about exactly what they would be in terms of Aristotle's schema. Well, let's just put it like this. The sharing of knowledge, perhaps, is a kind of generosity on a large scale that's enabled by having that platform. And we could think about all sorts of other ways in which this plays out. So in order to be really able to do all of the virtues, and I'm not saying anybody necessarily does all the virtues, but in order to do that, you would require some material prosperity, some means that you can use. You know, in the case of other goods, there's sort of a negative component. He says that lacking certain goods for the person will make the person less able to really enjoy happiness. So this is a kind of active and this is a kind of passive constraint. What are these? He talks about good birth. So I think, you know, one way to think about this is Aristotle doesn't talk about racism as such, but if you think about the way racial bias works in our modern Western society, where we've got this long heritage, an unfortunate one, of pretty horrific things and racial clashes that have continued on down to the present, even among people who seem to be, you know, relatively well-disposed and goodwill towards people, there's still implicit bias. That could be like what Aristotle's talking about in terms of birth. Hopefully we'll get beyond that eventually. Children. Children can be a great part of one's happiness. They can also diminish one's happiness. Likewise, friends. If your friends are unreliable, they can make you be less happy, even though you're a virtuous person and you're exhibiting that virtue. So, you know, you can think for with children of people who are good people and their kids somehow don't turn out to be particularly good. This is a common problem back in Aristotle's own time, one that Socrates actually got himself in a bit of trouble in two generations before for pointing out that the great politicians, the people who seemed to have virtue, somehow were not able to pass that on to their kids, and their kids were awful. Aristotle even talks about good looks. This is kind of an interesting one, and you might say that's really superficial, but then think about how much people do put into appearances, and those are external goods. You know, for example, do you take somebody like me as seriously if I am wearing a jacket and a button-down shirt as you would if I let my hair down and was wearing plain old flannels and looking very scruffy? Maybe not quite so much, right? Good looks can be about what you're wearing. It can be your appearance. It can be, you know, whether your face is symmetrical or not. All those sorts of things, right? I guess whether you keep your hair or don't keep your hair plays a part. Aristotle's point is a person can be, in fact, happy, engaged in virtuous activity, you know, if they've got some resources. If they're lacking these goods, it's not as if they're going to be unhappy, totally unhappy, but they're not going to be as happy. So it does play some role. In chapter 9, he brings up the case of Priam, the king of Troy, who had a pretty good life up until the time that the Trojans messed with the Greeks. And he finishes it out in pretty horrible ways, seeing his sons killed, his people butchered, his various female children taken away, his city ruined. Pretty horrific reversal of fortune, right? So all sorts of reversals of fortune can indeed happen, and they can happen not only to the, you know, run-of-the-mill people who are neither virtuous nor vicious, and also to people who are vicious, but to people who are virtuous. As a matter of fact, your virtue itself, as we see in many narratives, may attract negative attention and have people want to gun for you. Well, right? In chapter 10, he talks about how this plays out in a bit more detail. He says that virtue, by its nature, if you really possess virtue, it's a good that is very stable. So if you really are virtuous, losing things, external goods, is not going to ruin your virtue or make you less so. It might ruin other goods, like you may be held in less honor, you may lose political office, if you lose your money or lose your friends. So the good person is not going to be made miserable by losing these good things or by incurring bad things, but they're not going to be really happy. Their happiness is going to be marred, as he says. At the same time, virtue offers you what we can call resources, greater, as we like to say these days, resiliency in dealing with misfortune. I want to read you a few passages from this. He says, "The accidents of fortune are many and vary in degree of magnitude. Although small pieces of good luck clearly don't change the whole course of life, great and repeated successes will render life more blissful. But great and frequent reverses can crush and mar our happiness by both the pain that they cause and the hindrance that they offer to many activities." And then Aristotle goes on and says, "Nevertheless, even in adversity, nobility shines through when a man endures repeated and severe misfortune with patience, not owing to insensibility, but from generosity and greatness of soul." So virtue by itself, in the face of misfortune, is not going to make a person completely happy, but it will still play a major role in what measure of happiness that person has. And there's kind of a self-reinforcing dynamic there, right? Virtue makes you more resilient, more capable of rolling with the punches that life is going to deal you than the person who lacks virtue or the person who's even worse off, who is vicious. And so it won't necessarily insulate you from the pain that is caused or from the deprivation of you know, the positive capacities to exercise virtue. But it places you in the best condition no matter where you end up in the spectrum of external goods, you know, at the very bottom, all the way up to the very top. And as a matter of fact, for those, this is a little bit of a sideline here, for those who are closer to the top, the only thing that's going to keep them from going off the rails with all of that wealth, all of that power, all of those capacities to engage in self-indulgence will in fact be virtue. Without that, they're going to be just as lost as anybody else at any other state. So, long story short, we do in fact need external goods, but external goods play only a, you might say, finishing role ultimately in happiness. They play some role, but it's not the central role. That is played by virtuous activity, and that has a sort of dynamic relationship with those external goods.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.